Welcome back to the 2 a.m. Book Review Club, where we stay up late talking about books or talk about books that made us stay up late. If you listen to my monthly wrap-up episodes, which I know a lot of you do, you have probably figured out that I read a lot of mysteries. Mystery is actually my top read genre in 2023. I read 54 mysteries last year, and mystery is once again shaping up to be my top genre in 2024. I have read 29 mystery books so far this year. And you know what happens when you read too much of a single genre? What happens is that you become a very, very picky reader within that genre. This is also true of reading too much in general. If, like me, you read over 100 books a year, you just become a much harder reader to please. Becoming a picky reader is a bit sad, honestly, because you're just going to enjoy less of the books you read. But it's also natural because becoming a picky reader means that you are in the process of developing your own unique reading taste with your own specific reading preferences. And eventually, you do become much better at filtering out books that you think you'll enjoy versus books that look interesting, maybe, but that you're like, well, I probably wouldn't enjoy this book as much. So the point is that I'm a reader who loves mysteries. I will probably always be a reader who loves mystery books, but after having read so much of this genre, I have become a reader who does not love all mystery books. I am instead a reader who has realized that I love specific kinds of mystery books. And the great thing, the beautiful thing about the mystery genre is that there is so much variety within it. There are so many different types of mystery stories that there is basically a mystery book for every reading mood, which is probably why I end up reading so many mystery books. And what I've discovered over the course of my mystery reading adventures is that I basically like three different kinds of mystery books. Mystery type number one that I enjoy is mysteries that are perfect for when I'm just trying to relax. The kind of mystery book that you take with you to the beach or that you read by the pool. These are generally cozy mysteries for me, often historical and very often taking place in an isolated setting with a limited group of suspects. Some examples are A Most Agreeable Murder by Julia Seals, The Three Dahlias by Katie Watson, the Lily Adler series by Catherine Shellman, or even the classic Hercule Poirot stories by Agatha Christie. These are the books I read when all I really want is to solve a puzzle. I don't care about the characters. Don't care about the themes. All I care about is a puzzle that will engage my brain and entertain me for a couple of hours. I'm here to have a good time, and if you can give that to me, then I'm a happy camper. These books don't generally make a huge impression on me in the long run, but I definitely read a lot of them, and I have a lot of fun doing so because one of my core reading philosophies is that almost every book can be improved by throwing in an unsolved murder or two. Mystery type number two that I enjoy is mysteries that make some kind of commentary about the mystery genre. These are mysteries with a satirical edge, mysteries that engage with the tropes and conventions of the genre while also delivering a satisfying example of said genre. Some examples of this type of mystery are The Word is Murder by Anthony Horowitz, Everyone in My Family Has Killed Someone by Benjamin Stevenson, The Plot by Jean Hanf Korelitz, or even The 7.5 Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle by Stuart Turton. I like meta books in general, books about writers, or books that are about the nature of writing as a creative, emotional, and intellectual process. And I think mysteries, especially, have a lot of aspects you can think about as a writer and also as a reader. For example, the cognitive dissonance between crime as an actual violent, unpleasant fact of life versus crime as a plot point or an intellectual puzzle. The generic structure that almost every murder mystery uses, the way that certain tropes get used and reused over and over again. These meta-type mysteries are, again, books that I have a lot of fun with, books that make me think on multiple levels during the reading experience, but I also am not emotionally invested in these types of mysteries. I'm still treating them as puzzles, just with an added layer of meta fun. Again, these mysteries don't make a huge impression on me, but again, I do have a really good time reading them. And then we have the third type of mystery that I enjoy reading, my holy grail of mysteries, the kind of mystery book that I'm always consciously or subconsciously searching for, but don't find very often. These are mysteries that are more than just mystery books. Mysteries that transcend the mystery genre. Mysteries that descend into the darkest depths of human nature and explore the nuances of good and evil. Mysteries that give you complex characters and nuanced emotions and settings that feel so real you can see and smell and touch the events of the book. Mysteries that don't have perfectly good or perfectly bad characters. Mysteries that aren't afraid to hit you where it hurts. Mysteries that leave you feeling like, yes, we've solved the central puzzle, but we've also discovered uncomfortable truths about human nature and the human condition that we will never, ever be able to forget. Basically, mystery books that I engage with on every possible level, psychological, emotional, intellectual, and that leave me forever changed as a person. I'm thinking about books like The Secret History by Donna Tartt, because of course, or I Have Some Questions for You by Rebecca Mackay, or even Night Film by Marisha Pessel. These are my gold standards, the type of mystery book that defines how I view every mystery book I read. And finding a new mystery book that fits into this exalted category is truly an event in my reading life, because obviously it doesn't happen very often. And so when I say that not only have I found a mystery book that fits into this exclusive category, but I have also found a mystery book that I think could be my top mystery book in this category. A mystery book that I think could be my absolute favorite mystery book of 2024. That's a huge deal for me. It is, in fact, so exciting that I had to sit down and make an entire podcast episode about it. Because if I read more mysteries than any other genre, and if I found possibly my favorite mystery book of the entire year, then it is very possible that I have just found my favorite book of 2024. And I do think that this momentous event in my reading year, my 2024 reading journey, does deserve the spotlight of an entire dedicated podcast episode. And so here we are. At this point, you've probably noticed that I haven't actually told you what this book is. The book that I think might end up being my favorite mystery book of 2024, and maybe even my favorite book, period. And so, without trying your patience any further, I'll just go ahead and tell you that the book I am referring to is In the Woods by Tana French. How do I even begin to describe why I loved this book so much? How do I begin to explain to you the experience that is reading In the Woods for the first time? Maybe I should begin by telling you what this book, In the Woods, is about. In the Woods takes place in Ireland in the early 2000s, and we open with a prologue that I would argue is a masterclass in writing a poetic, tense, intriguing prologue. Here is a version of the prologue that I have shortened because I don't want to have to read the whole thing. Picture a summer stolen whole from some coming-of-age film set in small-town 1950s. This is none of Ireland's subtle season mixed for a connoisseur's palate, watercolor nuances within a pinch-sized range of cloud and soft rain. This is summer, full-throated and extravagant in a hot, pure, silkscreen blue. This summer explodes on your tongue, tasting of chewed blades of long grass, your own clean sweat, Marie biscuits with butter squirting through the holes, and shaken bottles of red lemonade picnicked in tree houses. It tingles on your skin with BMX wind in your face, ladybug feet up your arm. It packs every breath full of mown grass and billowing wash lines. It chimes in fountains with bird calls, bees, leaves, and football bounces and skipping chants. 1, 2, 3. This summer will never end. It starts every day with a shower of Mr. Whippy notes, and your best friend's knock at the door finishes it with a long, slow twilight and mothers silhouetted in doorways calling to you to come in through the bats shrilling among the black lace trees. This is every summer decked in all its best glory. Picture an orderly little maze of houses on a hill, only a few miles from Dublin. Farmers still pasture cows across the road, and night flicks on, only a sparse constellation of lights on the neighboring hillsides. Behind the estate, where the someday plans show, the shopping center and the neat little park spreads a square mile and who knows how many centuries of wood. Move closer, follow the three children scrambling over the thin membrane of brick and mortar that holds the wood back from the semi-Ds. Their bodies have the perfect economy of latency. They are streamlined and unself-conscious, paired to light flying machines. White tattoos, lightning bolt, star, A, flash where they cut band-aids into shapes and let the sun brown around them. A flag of white blonde hair flies out, toehold, knee on the wall, up and over and gone. The wood is all flicker and murmur and illusion. Its silence is a pointillist conspiracy of a million tiny noises, rustles, flurries, nameless truncated shrieks. Its emptiness teems with secret life scurrying just beyond the corner of your eye. These three children own the summer. They know the wood as surely as they know the micro-landscapes of their own grazed knees. Put them down blindfolded in any dell or clearing, and they could find their way out without putting a foot wrong. This is their territory, and they rule it wild and lordly as young animals. They scramble through its trees and hide and seek in its hollows, all the endless day long and all night to their dreams. They are running into legend, into sleepover stories and nightmares parents never hear, down the faint lost paths you would never find alone, skidding round the tumbled stone walls. They stream calls and shoelaces behind them like comet trails. And who is it waiting on the riverbank with his hands in the willow branches, whose laughter tumbles, swaying from a branch high above? Whose is the face in the undergrowth, in the corner of your eye, built of light and leaf shadow, there and gone in a blink? These children will not be coming of age this or any other summer. This August will not ask them to find hidden reserves of strength and courage as they confront the complexity of the adult world and come away sadder and wiser and bonded for life. This summer has other requirements for them. As you can probably guess from this abbreviated version of the prologue, In the Woods opens with the tragic story of three children who spend all summer playing in the woods behind their house until the day they go into the woods and never return. There's ominous foreshadowing in this prologue about the mysterious figure in the woods that's waiting for them, and we get the sense that their disappearance is linked to some kind of foul play. The story then jumps forward a couple of decades, and we're following Rob Ryan, a detective who is part of the elite Dublin Murder Squad, which feels very real in the context of the story, but the author tells us in the afterword that it's actually completely made up, which really impressed me. And plot twist, we learn that Rob Ryan is actually one of the kids who went into the woods that fateful summer day so long ago. But unlike his friends, he actually made it back out. If you're already sensing a discrepancy between the reality of what happened and the poetic stretching of the truth in the prologue, I'll just say that the prologue is very much worth rereading after you've finished reading the book, because it becomes so much more poignant and heartbreaking. So, after surviving the tragic and mysterious fate of his two childhood friends because their bodies were never found, Rob has decided to make solving murders his career, which, unsurprisingly, proves to be a bad choice when he is assigned to solve the murder of a child who was found close to the same wood where his friends disappeared all those years ago. So now, suddenly, Rob has to not only solve this murder case, but this murder case may or may not be related to the cold case that defined his entire childhood, the cold case that only he has the answers to, or which he would have the answers to if he could remember what happened, which he can't. He has no memories of what happened that day, or maybe more accurately, he does have the memory somewhere, but they were so traumatic for him that he repressed them, and now he can't get them back. Looking back over my reading experience of In the Woods, there are three main things that really, really stood out to me. And those three things are the characters, the writing, and the plot, which I know is basically everything that you can talk about when it comes to a book. But I did warn you in advance that this episode is just me talking about how much I loved this book. Let's begin with the characters and the writing, which normally I would discuss separately, but for this book, In the Woods, the enjoyment of these two elements is very much interwoven, and here's what I mean by that. If I were to compare In the Woods to one other book, it would be The Secret History by Donna Tartt, which these days is most famous for being the dark academia book that people think of when they're talking about dark academia, either as a genre or as an aesthetic, because it is set in an elite college among a small group of students who are all obsessed with ancient Greece. How very dark academia of them. But to me, when I think of The Secret History, what I remember is the comprehensively and compulsively detailed character studies that are so essential to understanding a story that is not a whodunit. It's not about who committed the murder, but instead, it's a why done it. Why did they commit this murder? And those character studies are executed using some of the most expressive, gorgeous, vibrant writing I have ever read. Like, for example, there's this quote. "His voice chilled me to the bone, though he and Henry had in common a distinct coldness of manner. Sometimes, around them, the very temperature seemed to drop. I had always thought Henry's coldness essential to the marrow, and Julian's only a veneer for what was, at bottom, a warm and kind-hearted nature. But the twinkle in Julian's eye, as I looked at him now, was mechanical and dead. It was as if the charming, theatrical curtain had dropped away, and I saw him, for the first time, as he really was. Not the benign old sage, the indulgent and protective good parent of my dreams, but ambiguous, a moral neutral, whose beguiling trappings concealed a being watchful, capricious, and heartless." The Secret History could never have had the impact that it has on readers. Without this marriage of compelling characters and Donna Tartt's signature writing style. And similarly, Tana French's In the Woods fleshes out its nuanced central characters. Rob, his detective partner Cassie, their colleagues, and of course, their array of suspects through writing that at its best is just as compelling, just as beautiful, and just as emotionally resonant as Donna Tartt's. There are so many tiny throwaway lines throughout In the Woods that just really hit me with their psychological insight. Like, for example, this line, "Children, don't tell pointless lies unless the reality is too much to bear." Or this line, "The whole art of lying is knowing when to stop." And then we have longer passages like this one where Rob is talking about his partner, Cassie. There has always been something enigmatic about Cassie. This is one of the things I like in her, and I like it all the more for being paradoxically a quality that isn't readily apparent. Elusiveness brought to so high a level it becomes almost invisible. She gives the impression of being startlingly, almost childishly open, which is true as far as it goes. What you see is in fact what you get. But what you don't get, what you barely glimpse, this is the side of Cassie that fascinated me always. Even after all this time, I knew there were rooms inside her that she had never let me guess at, let alone enter. There were questions she wouldn't answer, topics she would discuss only in the abstract. Tried to pin her down and she would skim away laughing as nimbly as a figure skater. But where the writing and the book really shines is in the protagonist himself, Rob Ryan. Because here's the thing, right? Every other character, every psychological insight is filtered through the perspective of this incredibly complex and, let's admit it, often unlikable protagonist. You would think that Rob's tragic backstory, trademark, copyright, etc., would make him this lonely, noble, heroic figure seeking the justice that was denied to his childhood friends. But actually, Rob is Just a guy who's trying to do his job while also being in deep denial about the effect that his childhood tragedy has had on him. He spent his entire life running from the memories of what happened in the woods that day, and this has left him hollow, empty, unable to truly connect to anyone. Rob is a character that I think is best described as dynamic because he evokes so many different emotions in the reader over the course of the book. You feel frustrated with him, but you also feel deeply sorry for him because how can you not, right? You identify with him because he's got a lot of relatable quirks, but you also cannot believe he just said what he said or did what he did. And what's most interesting about Rob is that when you reach the point where you think you know everything there is to know about him, when you think you understand him completely, you realize that actually you don't really know him at all. And furthermore, you never can. Because remember, Rob is missing a crucial part of himself. He is missing the memories of what happened that fateful summer day. And as long as that void exists, Rob can never truly know himself, and neither can we. Here's a quote that I think best embodies this fundamental distance between Rob and his true self, which is also the unbridgeable distance between Rob and the reader. I thought about a lot of things that night. I thought of Cassie and Leon, just a girl in an apron, serving coffee at sunny outdoor tables and bantering in French with the customers. I thought of my parents getting ready to go out dancing. The careful lines, my father's comb left in his burl-creamed hair. The rousing scent of my mother's perfume and her flower-patterned dress whisking out the door. I thought of Jonathan and Cathal and Shane. Long-limbed and rash, and laughing fiercely over their lighter games, of Sam at a big wooden table amid seven noisy brothers and sisters. I thought of Mark's reckless eyes. The only things I believe in are out there on that dig. And then of revolutionaries waving ragged, gallant banners, of refugees swimming swift nighttime currents. Of all those who hold life so light, or the stakes so dear, that they can walk steady and open-eyed to meet the thing that will take or transform their lives, and whose high, cold criteria are far beyond our understanding. I tried for a long time to remember bringing my mother wildflowers. So that's the characters and the writing, and now let's move on to the plot. On one level, the plot of In the Woods is a fairly straightforward police procedural type story. A little girl has been murdered, and the Dublin Murder Squad needs to find out A, who murdered her, and B, if it's related to the two kids who went missing in the woods all those years ago. But there is also something really, really interesting going on with the plot of this book because of the tension between the mystery storyline and the protagonist who is supposed to be solving said mystery. Rob is not an objective, impartial detective who is focused on finding out the truth and getting justice for this poor child. No, he is a very biased detective who is struggling to solve the case of the murdered child while also dealing with all of the repressed pain and trauma he's been running from. Rob does not always see things the way they are. He lies to himself and to us, and the entire book is infused with Rob's regret and pain as he reflects back on all of the mistakes he made throughout the course of the investigation and all of the opportunities he missed along the way. I am not good at noticing when I'm happy, except in retrospect. My gift or fatal flaw is for nostalgia. I have sometimes been accused of demanding perfection, of rejecting heart's desires as soon as I get close enough that the mysterious, impressionistic gloss disperses into plain, solid dots. But the truth is less simplistic than that. I know very well that perfection is made up of frayed, off-struck mundanities. I suppose you could say my real weakness is a kind of long-sightedness. Usually, it is only at a distance and much too late that I can see the pattern. In the Woods is not one of those mystery books where there's a lot of action, there's chase sequences and shootouts, or whatever police procedural type stories tend to have, but there's still plenty of drama. It's just the drama is psychological and emotional rather than physical. And if there's one thing you can say about this book, it is that it is an emotional roller coaster. The tension is incredibly high. The highs are so high. The lows are so low. And then you get to the end of the book and you're just in shock. Honestly, I was in shock when I finished in the woods because I was left emotionally devastated by the ending on every level. The ending of this book brings together all of the themes, psychological, legal, criminal, emotional, and brings those themes into this enormous emotional climax that leaves you completely drained of all emotion, and yet somehow you are also feeling all of the emotions. In the Woods left me with that feeling I always get when I finish an epic story, a book that I know is going to be monumentally important to me personally, a book that I will never, ever forget. You know, the kind of book that potentially could end up as my favorite mystery book of the year. Now, at this point, I think I've been excited enough about this book, In the Woods, that I should probably clarify that I don't actually love everything about this book. For example, In the Woods is very early 2000s in its mindset, and that is not a compliment. For example, I really, really hated this quote. Give me some credit. Britney is exclusively for those with cheap tastes. It would have to be Scarlett Johansson at least. Like, come on, seriously. Apparently, people in the early 2000s really, really could not leave Britney Spears alone. Also, there's a big event, turning point, in the dynamic between Rob and his detective partner, Cassie. And this turning point comes, I want to say, like 60 to 70% of the way through the book. And after that turning point, I really, really struggled with being in Rob's perspective because he was just so unreasonable towards Cassie. I guess it really didn't help that at a certain point, the narrative starts relying very, very heavily on the reader being fooled by the murderer, which I was not, because not to brag or anything, but I'm pretty good at figuring mystery plots out, a side effect of reading so many of them, and I was so annoyed with Rob for not being able to see what I saw, and as a result, just being very, very unfair to Cassie, who really didn't deserve it. So there is all of that. But I should also definitely emphasize that this is not a book for the faint of heart. It gets very graphic. It gets very violent. It's not a cozy mystery. Let's say that. Cozy mysteries shy away from the actual like violence or the effects of violence. And In the Woods, due to its nature as like a police procedural type story, is not shy about going into the gory, unpleasant details. So you should definitely be aware of that if you're interested in this book. So as you can see, In the Woods is by no means a perfect mystery book or a perfect book, but one, I don't think that's a reasonable expectation to have in the first place. And two, I was just so impressed, so blown away by what this book did well, that to me, at the end of the day, I didn't really care about the drawbacks. Yes, In the Woods has its flaws, but it is still my favorite mystery book that I have read so far this year. I still think it might end up being my favorite mystery book of 2024. And if you love Donna Tartt's work, especially The Secret History, if you're looking for a mystery book that is so much more than a mystery book that has the potential to change your life, then I absolutely think that you should pick up In the Woods and give it a shot. Although, I would highly recommend checking the trigger warnings beforehand because I cannot emphasize enough that it is indeed very graphic. I was so excited to learn that this is the first book in a series, the first book in the Dublin Murder Squad series, and so I'm very, very excited to continue in this series, and hopefully I enjoy the rest of the books as much as I enjoyed this first book. And that is going to be everything for this episode. This has been the 2 a.m. Book Review Club. Thanks so much for joining me, and I will be back next week at 2 a.m. Until then, have a great week, and happy book travels.